In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. I'm speaking today with Flavia Corey, singer and guitarist in the Danish duo The Koretz. Their most recent album, The Soul of the Fabulous Koretz, is out on Damaged Good Records and home to our recent coolest song in the world, California. We'll hear a portion of that now, followed by my chat with Flavia on your Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Mighty Manfred, and on the line with me right now is Flavia Corey, lead singer and guitarist in the duo The Koretz, which feature her husband Martin Corey on the drums. And they are based in Denmark, and they've been together since about 2015. Their latest album, The Soul of the Fabulous Koretz, is home to this week's coolest song in the world, California, and it features backing vocals on it from Lala Brooks. She, of course, sang vocals with The Crystals on some hit singles back in the 60s. How are you, Flavia?
Hi, Manfred. I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're very, very welcome. Very excited to be chatting with you. Now, my understanding is, and help me out here, you're from Brazil. Your husband is from Denmark. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, let's start with you. Where are you from in Brazil?
I'm from Rio.
Are you the girl from Ipanema?
I'm the riot girl from Ipanema, probably.
Oh, man, that sounds good. Well, you grew up there in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, I grew up there. Yeah, I've been living in Denmark for the last 10 years, so I live basically in Brazil my whole life.
All right, so do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, brother and sister.
So the three of you, and you play guitar and sing in the Koretz, your sound very 60s influenced. Was there much music going on at home when you were growing up?
Yeah, actually my first band was with my sister. She's 3 years older than me, and she used to play the drums. And I used to play the bass, you know. I started playing music at a very early age. But my mom and dad and, you know, the adults, they were not music interested at all. But I grew up with a lot of music around me, you know. If you know, I mean, I was born in the 80s. And maybe you know that it was with Rock in Rio and the big festivals in Brazil, it just opened up to many international artists to start touring Brazil. So this really made a big impression in me growing up. You know, I remember seeing this huge Tina Turner show on the TV, I think it was 85, you know, because they just put it on replay after many years. And it was just amazing to see her performing, and used to imitate her hair when I went to school. And so it was a lot of influences. MTV Brazil arrived in 1990. And as I hear from all the bands who gave interviews to MTV Brazil, it was much cooler than the American MTV. It was all about music. It was music all the time. There's no reality shows. nothing about that. So, and it was like this show called B-Side, Lado B, which played only like alternative rock. And, you know, I learned about the Cramps there when I was like 11, 12 years old. And I saw the Ramones when I was 13. I saw Nirvana when I was 11. So there was a big, it was music everywhere. And the so-called B-rock, Brazilian rock, was very popular in mainstream radio back then, 80s and early 90s. So I was very influenced about all the, you know, the Riot Girl thing and grunge. And my mom was a big Beatles fan. My aunt's a big Stones fan. So I was always curious, you know, grew up listening to the Beatles and the Stones, and then it led to the Kinks and the Seeds. And so I've been a 60s music lover since I'm 12. And I've been, you know, collecting records and digging this kind of music all my life.
Well, you mentioned your sister playing drums and being a little bit older than you. So did I hear you right? Did you say you were playing bass with your sister?
Yeah.
Currently, you're playing guitar. Did you start with bass? How old were you when you started playing bass?
Yeah, I started actually. I always wanted to play bass. I think mainly because of Paul McCartney. I think he was just the bass. You know, I didn't even know it was a bass. Just I looked very cool, his Hofner, as a kid. You know, and I wanted to play bass, but I just found an acoustic guitar in my family's holiday house that my mom had give my father had give to my mother, and I. You know, I didn't know about it at all. And I just found this acoustic guitar. So I started playing it, by myself, learning it by myself when I was 11. So it was guitar, my first instrument. But I changed to the bass just right after when I gathered money and my mom used to give money for, you know, eating at the school. I just started, you know, collecting this money. And then I bought a bass myself because she didn't want to buy me a bass. She said I had to learn the guitar first. So... then I bought a bass. It was a copy of a Rickenbacker, Brazilian copy called Finch. I still have it. It's the only instrument I actually brought from Brazil when I moved to Denmark. And then I learned how to play the bass. And then after I had lessons, you know, but I started as a, you know, autodidact. I started playing, you know, learning songs with the ears. And it was a small magazines you can buy back then. It was no internet. So you just learned the chords, you know, and... I had some friends who could play a little better than me, so we just exchanged some chords. And so that was, I mean, guitar was my first instrument, but I just skipped right away to the bass. And I played bass in many bands before the Corettes. Actually, the Corettes is the second band where I played guitar.
Well, about that, I was curious because I went through a Discogs and you know, was clicking on your name, and I saw a couple of different bands. What was the band that you were, because the story that I've heard is that you were in a band, and your husband Martin was with a Danish band, and that they had come over to tour Brazil, and that the two bands were touring together. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. That's how we met. We met
Okay. What was this band that you were playing with at the time when you played with Martin's band?
Yeah, it was called Autoramas. I was in this band for 7 years, playing bass and doing backing vocals. We played like Rock and Rio. We made like a MTV Unplugged DVD. So we had a nice career in Brazil. And then there was Martin's band called Colombian Neckties back then, as a Danish punk band. We just started networking with this German label, and they say, "Well, I can help you guys in Europe." We tour Europe 10 times. I tour Europe 10 times with Autoramas. And then they say, "Well, I have this Danish band. I would like to, you know, tour Brazil. Can you help us with that?" And then we put out a tour, and I met Martin at 5 a.m, 6 a.m. in the tour van. So he was just the first guy to come in. And I remember counting the places of the van. It would be 2 weeks tour, me, 14 guys in a 50 seat van. So I just said, "Well, I'll keep this place here by myself empty, put my stuff on it." And then Martin came and said, "Oh, can I sit here?" So I was slightly annoyed, but then we start, you know, talking to each other and discovering we had a very similar musical taste and a lot of interest in common, like op art and 60s design, space age design, and you know, plastic fantastic. And so we just
you kind of hit it off.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last day of the tour, we were together thinking, well, what are we going to do? 10,000 kilometers, or I don't know how many miles is that, but a lot away from each other. And but after 2 years, you know, in a long distance relationship, so I moved to Denmark.
Wow. Okay. So you moved over to Denmark. About when is this? Around 2015?
2015, yeah.
So you get there 2015 and you guys are together. Had you already thought about, hey, we're gonna have a band together?
Actually, it was never planned that we should have a band. And it's weird to say like this. People think we're just making it up, you know. But it's totally the truth. The thing is that when we were like just 2 years, you know, dating in a long distance relationship, I was a lot of times alone in the airplanes when I was touring Europe with Autoramas. I always, you know, took a plane to Denmark to see him and. The way home back to Brazil alone. So I just had a lot of time alone and, you know, experiencing lots of things. So I wrote the songs like The Boy I Love and I Want to Be Yoko Ono. I've Been Walking, like most of the songs of the first record on planes, you know, traveling. And then one day I was visiting him in Denmark and said, well, why don't we go to the studio and play the songs you wrote? So we went to the studio and we were, you know, just first chord. I brought the guitar, not the bass, because that's where, you know, I wrote the songs. So, and I was just, wow, this sounds really special this year. This is really cool. And, you know, a lot of people ask, oh, you wanted to make a duo like White Stripes or whatever. I mean, we never even thought about that, that we have to be two. It just happened that we were playing the songs and it just sounded really good, sounded really special. Then our first show we ever played it was in Denmark, and Kim Kicks from a Danish band called Power Solo was in the crowd and he really loved it. Then he invited us to record the first album. And it's 8 songs because we only had 8 songs. So that was very early on we recorded the first album. And so we released in 2015.
Wow. Okay. So someplace I had heard that or read that initially you had thought about having other people in the band, but when you recorded those songs just between yourselves, that's when the realization came, oh, let's just do this ourselves.
Yeah, we when we played that, you know, that time in the studio for the first time, we thought it was really cool. And then we thought, well, should we put more people in this? But then we realized, well, no. So, and then, of course, it's a challenge. It's a big challenging to play only 2 people, you know, to make this big sound live. And it took us many years to build a sound that was, you know, powerful and could fill the whole room as a duo. So it actually would have been easier just to put somebody else, you know. We took the hard way.
Wow. All right. Well, your latest album, let's talk about this, The Soul of the Fabulous Corettes. Came out last year on Damaged Good Records, and it features our coolest song in the world this week, California. And on there, you got backing vocals from Lala Brooks. Also on the album, you got famed songwriter and producer Richard Goddard mixed a couple of songs. I'll ask you about that in a couple of minutes. But this particular album, The Soul of the Fabulous Corettes, when and where did you record it?
Yeah, we recorded it in Denmark in our own studio.
Own studio? Let me hear that right. You have your own studio.
It's our own studio, yeah. We built it in 2000, when was it? Before the pandemic. It was, pandemic was 2019. We put all the money we made from the band that year in building our own studio because we had a great 2020, you know, booked a lot of shows. And we think, well, we can do that. Let's build a studio. We already were thinking about Becky Mono. We wanted to do this album, you know, and really work with no deadlines, with time. And then we built our own studio. And then 2020 came with the pandemics. And we was seeing like our shows being canceled one by one. And I think, okay, what are we going to do? We had no money at all, but we had the studio. So we recorded back in Bono back then. But this album, The Soul Of, I think we did the sessions in 2000. It was 24 mainly. I think Shake, the single we recorded at the end of 23, But most of them were like in the beginning of 2024, the sessions. So we recorded in our own studio.
Wow. And so your song, California, I mentioned that's our coolest song of the week. Do you have any friends out here in California?
Well, I've made some friends, yeah. And the thing is, as I told you guys, you know, I've been a rock and roll lover since a very young age. So growing up in Brazil and listening to bands like The Birds and The Beach Boys, you know, The Doors, just, you know, our first tour to the U.S. was like Rock and Roll Pilgrim to both of us. It was my first time as a grown-up in the U.S. So it was the same. I felt the same when I went to the U.K. tour for the first time. You know, you just walk in London, you know, hearing the King song, everywhere, like Waterloo Sunset. And so it was a little bit, I felt quite the same, you know, going to Laurel Canyon and, you know, just Love Street. And so it has this rock and roll mystique, you know, with a psychedelic rock and all that. So it was very magical, actually. We had really a good time in the U.S. And I think it inspired a lot the soul of Fabulous Carettes. You know, we, our rock and roll program, we went to, you know, Sun Records. We went to Motown Studio 8 in Detroit. In Memphis, we went to Sun Records. Elvis, and we went to the Al Green's church to see a gospel church. It was amazing. What else?
And was Al Green there? Did he conduct the sermon?
Unfortunately, no. It, you know, you never know. It was the only Sunday there, so that's actually our first day off on a tour. We just said, well, we have to see Memphis. We went to Stax Museum, and but it was great. Even that he was not. I've never been in a gospel church before, so it was.
Well, some other time we'll talk about, but I did go there, and he had a sermon, and it was pretty amazing. Everything about the churches, you know, the band is like incredible. You just like, when I was there, it was like an 8-year-old boy playing drums and a like 300-year-old man on guitar. But it was amazing.
Amazing.
And the choir was amazing. And of course Al Green came out, and I could tell you about that some other time, but I'm curious. So I had seen you last year in San Pedro. You played there, the Sardine, with the Schizophonics. That was here in California. And when you're talking about these other places that you visited, so that was all last year on tour. That was the first time you came to the U.S.?
It was 2023, yeah. And that tour you saw us, that was the first time in the U.S., I mean, second, because we played South by Southwest in Austin, and then we went back to the West Coast tour in May. So that was second time. But then we went to, for example, Laurel Canyon. And then we came back in September the same year. Then we went to the East Coast, and we did a Ghana Festival in Memphis. That's where we had the day off. We played Detroit. So we were able to visit Studio A before it opened, because we met a guy in the door, you know. It's not a story, but I know we have time, but it's just, we arrived in Detroit and said, well, I have to go to Motown. Then we arrived there, it was closed. And the next day they were sold out, or they were also closed. But it came this guy named Paul. Thanks, Paul, if he's listening. And he saw us. Oh, where are you guys from? I guess you're emotional about it. I said, well, Brazil and Denmark. And the tour manager was Dutch, and say, well, we'd love to come in, but it's closed, and we go, you know, continue the tour tomorrow. And so, well, why don't you come here at 9 before it opens? I'm going to show you around. So that was like Studio A. Like, I also get chills just thinking about it. So much musical vibes inside. It's absolutely crazy. So that was the first time. I mean, this year, 2023, we got a lot of impressions about U.S. and what the best U.S. has to offer. That for me is, of course, the music. So there was we had very good memories of the first three tours we did that, because it was very special.
And so the song California, obviously, you know, it resonates with you a lot, the state and the music scene from the 60s, especially, as you mentioned. So that's an inspiration. When did you actually write the tune?
Oh, we wrote back in Denmark. Yeah. It was so many impressions and so many, you know, ideas popping up during the tour. But I just sit down when we came back to, you know, cold Denmark. And also the thing is with California, I come from Rio and I live in Denmark. So everything about California, I felt a little bit like, okay, this is very familiar for me. Like the palm trees, you know, there's a lot of Hispanic people living there speaking Spanish, you know. And of course the beaches, and so it was warm, it was sunny. So I was really missing the sun and I didn't know it. So when I came, I was like a while without going to Brazil. So going to California had this weird feeling like, okay, just feels a little bit like home. So then we came home and then I had the idea of writing a song about it, but back in a cloudy and rainy Denmark.
We know the song California Dreamin', how they came up with that, right? They spent a miserable winter in New York City, and then
I know the story. Yeah, it's my
story. Right, you know the story. Yeah. Well, okay, so when you were, so let's talk about the songwriting. So you were inspired to write the tune. How does it? Is there a typical way it works with you and Martin when you're writing up coming up with a song? Does he contribute lyrics or song ideas, or is that melodies coming from you, or how does it work typically?
I mean, it has no rule, you know. Sometimes comes up a riff, sometimes it comes up a concept, or sometimes the whole lyrics are ready and then we have to put music on it. Sometimes the whole song is ready and there's no lyrics. So I mean, we tried everything, but the first record, I wrote it all alone. Martin always had this very important role of saying, no, this sucks, let's not continue this one is good, let's work on that. So or maybe say, oh, let's write a song about this or that. So in the second album, then you know, we had also our son before our second album, so we were not sleeping at all. So it was very hard to have to calm down and, you know, being able to write songs and being creative when you don't sleep. You know, when you have a time off, you just want to sleep. So I wrote, I think from the 14 songs, I wrote like 11 of them. And then we had a songwriter partner called Soren Christensen. He's one of Martin's teenage friends. He plays keyboard and organ and guitar in a band, dance band called The Blue Van. He's a great musician. And we just started to make a gig. Let's go to his studio. We didn't have our studio back then, and write songs quietly without the baby for, you know, focusing. So he has like two or three in the second album, We Are the Courettes, that we co-wrote with him, the three of us. And in Back in Mono, our third album, so it was the opposite. We wrote from the 14 songs, 12 songs with Soren and Martin, and two I wrote myself, Hop the Twig and Trishkin Honey. And this album, The Soul of the Fabulous Courettes, we wrote the three of us, but I do most of it, the music a lot too. Martin comes with a lot of ideas, and me and Soren, we do the musical part, so they all contributed to California too in a way.
Very cool. I was going to ask you more about is his first name Soren Christensen, is that Soren?
Soren, yeah, it's
Soren. I'll ask you more about him in a moment, but On this track on California, you've got Lala Brooks from the Crystals singing backing vocals. How did you get her involved with the song?
Yeah, just, you know, first starting, we're super thrilled about it. You know, we're big Crystals fans. And, you know, after Roni Spector and Mary West died, I mean, she's one of the only one of the girl groups heroines left, you know, and we always wanted to contribute, you know, to collaborate with her. And we actually reached out to her management, her email, and we never got a response. And it's also, so the story also has to do with our shows in the US. We played our first gig in New York City, and Matt Vetteray and his wife, Rosie Vetteray, went to see us because we have some friends in common. And then I don't know why we were chatting with them after the show, and it popped up this, all we're big fans of Lala Brooks, so big fans of the Crystal. The Luna Run is actually one of my favorite songs ever recorded. And then I think Matt just said, well, I produced her last album. And we were like, oh my God, really? And So we asked him, well, don't you think you can show her a couple of songs? And if she would like to put some backing vocals, we will be absolutely thrilled. And I said, well, I'll see what I can do. She's not, you know, super open to collaborate with other musicians. So it took a while after he talked to her and was no response at the beginning. And then suddenly she heard the songs and she said, yeah. So we were like, we were still like pitching ourselves, you know. It's a big honor to have Lala, you know, feature in our album. You know, something, if a 15-year-old me would hear this, I would say, wow, this is never going to happen. So yeah, it's just absolutely awesome. Yeah.
On the album, Richard Goddard mixed a couple of songs. That's my understanding. And, you know, back in the 60s, he was both a famed songwriter, producer, you know, with Bob Feldman and Jerry Goldstein. He did the Boyfriends Back, the Angels. And then those three guys also recorded and toured as the Strange Loves. And then in the 80s, Goddard was working with, you know, what we called New Wave at the time, all kinds of, you know, the Go-Go's and Blondie and all these, also the Fleshtones, all these great bands from that era. So how did you get Richard Goddard involved on the album, and what two songs does he mix?
Well, he makes the Keep Dancing and Boom Boom Boom.
Oh, cool. And how did you get him involved?
Yeah, it's another thing we're just pitching ourselves up to now, because we're big fans of Richard, and especially as a songwriter. I mean, he wrote I Want Candy, you know. That's probably one of the best songs in the world. So and we also always talked about, oh, we really want to collaborate with him somehow, you know. And we were also in the U.S. We were in a play in South by Southwest last year. And we were hanging out with Brian Pereira from Cleopatra Records. And we mentioned it to him, wow, really would like to do something with Richard. But we didn't know how to contact him at all, you know. And he said, well, I'm having dinner with him tomorrow. That was literally what happened. I haven't said once. So we thought, well, do you think you can show him one of our songs? Because we were not sure who we're going to mix the album, actually. And so we thought, well, can you just play him a song? See what he thinks. And he actually, Brian just said, oh, send me a song. Then I can have it in my phone, so it's easy to play at the dinner to Richard. And then I did. And we came back home to Denmark with, you know, many hours on a plane. I arrived home jet lagged. So we went to bed. And I woke up the next day, and there was a voice message on my phone. And I listened to it and say, oh, hello, Flavia, this is Richard. I love the song. I think it's an amazing song. And I was like, oh my God, he was like a real building songwriter. And he likes my song. So, and he said, please send me an email. And he said, it's Richard Guthrie. He even like spelled his name. Oh, I got the email right. And what a sweetheart. And then we contact him and then say, well, I'm definitely up for mixing the songs. The song, it was supposed to be just one song. But I don't remember why in the end. So we needed a B-side for the single, because it was released as a single, Keep Dancing, before the album came out. So we needed a B-side, and we thought it makes sense that he would, you know, mix two tracks. So he mixed with Alonso Vargas, which is his engineer. So, and we think it sounds amazing, you know. So it's totally spot on. And so for us, it's also like a big honor, you know. I think it's also like standout track on the album. So we're just absolutely thrilled.
So let me, one more thing about Soren Christensen. So he co-wrote a lot of stuff on the newest album on California. And he plays these keyboards throughout the album. And killer, that's his killer. So I've seen you perform just as a duo. Does he ever play with you live? Would you consider having like an extra person along?
Yeah, well, he would definitely, if we needed a third Corette, if there is such a thing as a third Corette, that's Soren. Absolutely. He's evolved from a, you know, from a touring musician with his band to a producer, songwriter guy. And we're so happy that he's been getting more and more, you know, requests. He's, you know, producing a lot of artists in Denmark. Also, he's totally a rock and roll garage guy, you know, but he's doing all kinds of stuff now, some more pop singer-songwriters. He's just so, he's such a great musician. He can do whatever, you know, he's a very, he's a fantastic guy to work with, but he's not touring. He's not this, this kind of musician anymore who, you know, jumps in a van and goes around the world to do tours. So no, unfortunately, no. But the thing is, we actually made a Bakemono tour. The last part of the tour, we used the bass player, which was nice. And since September this year, we're for the first time in 10 years, we're experimenting with backing tracks. So because Bakemono is such a sophisticated, Bakemono and the Soul are sophisticated albums. And a lot of people, I think it's also important to say that it's just the three of us. I mean, we had special guests in the Soul, but it's the three of us playing like all the instruments, because I remember we had to give an interview for the Soul, saying, oh, you have the whole orchestra playing, you know. Now it's me playing the bass, me playing the piano. I do the backing vocals. Martin plays all the percussion, and Sarin does the mellotron organ. So it's three musicians doing everything. So playing with overdubs, because we develop our own wall of sound that we would like to develop. That's why we built the studio, actually. And so that's what we've been doing. We found a way of you know, being creative in the studio. And somehow we also gave ourselves the permission to not limit our creativity in the studio based on what we could play live with two instruments. Because in the first album, we were very worried about, okay, let's not record a bass. I could easily have recorded a bass since the first album, but we were worried that people would miss that sound live. And after the second album, there's already some overdubs. I play some piano, and there is some vocal harmonies and a dulcetone I play too. So it was only the two of us playing the instruments, but already with overdubs. So we just found out, had like epiphany that, you know, a good song is a good song with acoustic guitar and on the beach, or with you alone with the piano, or with a full orchestra. It's all about the songs, and studio work is something, and live work is another one. And we love both of them, and we see no point anymore of, you know, giving limits to our creativity on the studio. So I like to say that we do like Sgt. Pepper's and Hamburg shows all together at the same time. And we could definitely also survive without the backing tracks. We did this for 10 years, but now we want to have a little bit of, you know, 12 strings guitars and a little bit of organs, Soren's organ and some details. So it's actually been very good. We never thought at all about using the backing tracks, but it really gives a bigger, you know, sound universe to the live show. So it's been very interesting. And without also like limiting the energy that you saw us live, we really like to, you know, have a very organic show. So I think now we found a very good way of performing live without losing the musical sophistication, and also having the live raw energy that we really dig to.
Yeah. Okay. There are several songs on the album, like Better Without You, Don't Want You Back. They've got a theme of a dude who wronged you, and whoever that guy is, I hope he got what he deserved, right? So to write those kinds of songs, how do you deal with that? Does that put you in a bad place? Are you reliving those events that you dealt with? It's like having a catharsis to be able to write a song about it. You see what I'm getting at? How difficult is it to write those songs, or do they come easy?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, all the songs, I mean, the ideas come easy, but the songs come hard, right? This is that's at least my approach to songwriting. We have a lot of ideas, but to make the, you know, to finish with a song, it's actually very hard. It just takes a lot of work. Sometimes you write a song in 3 minutes, right? But I don't know. I mean, so, but the topics, you know, that I think what you mean is the more dark themes that we approach in this album, and a little bit in Back in Mono too, actually, because of the pandemics and everything that was going on back then. So we're big fans of Bert Burns, and he's the one who wrote Take Another Piece of My Heart, called Piece of My Heart, actually, the song. And I just saw this documentary, Bang, and I always thought it was a love story, but it was actually about his heart condition. So this was very, like, gave me a big impression. And I think it's a very cool way to approach some dark themes, but put it in a pop universe. So, and pretend it to be like a girl group song or a heartbreak song. So this is the, you know, kind of a way of songwriting that I really dig. And we did in Hop the Twig, for example, in Back in Mono, and also was the other one? There's a Hey Boy. So it's already, we were already in that direction, but with the Soul Off, I think we went even deeper with this, you know, this songwriting form. And some of the themes are very hard. They were like cathartic, as you say. It was a catharsis to write about, especially You Keep Dancing and Don't Want You Back, because they were two songs that I wrote thinking about my father. And he died of COVID in 2021. And yeah, thank you. But we actually didn't have this normal, you know, father-daughter relationship. He, you know, abandoned me and my sister in a very early age, and I barely had contact with him my whole adult life since I'm 7 years old, actually. So it's it was a lot of, you know, ghosts that just came back to my head in the period of his death, you know, because it was the, you always have this little hope that maybe, you know, we can connect again and, you know, happy endings. But life is no, I mean, life is different. It's, sometimes there's no happy endings. So that was, the two songs were very cathartic and hard to write about, but also felt like even a, you know, an ending, a closure to the story. So I'm very happy to have, you know, been able to transform such a pain in something something people could also enjoy and dance to, like Keep Dancing. I think it's a great song, and Rich Gother thinks it's a great song. So that was cathartic, as you say. It was a big catharsis. But
the second thing before I forget is that I want to point out, so, you know, Piece of My Heart, Bert Burns, but he co-wrote that with Jerry Ragavoy, and that's another great songwriter. I mean, when those, Bert Burns wrote, you know, all these great Solomon Burke songs, but when he's teamed up with Ragavoy, those are like those are always special. So the, another one they did together was the one that Garnet Mims did and had a hit with that later, you know, Janis Joplin covered when she was in Big Brother and the Holding Company. She covered, you know, Piece of My Heart. But she also did, I think it's Cry Baby. I think that was it. You know, that is another one that Jerry Ragavoy wrote with Bert Burns. And it seems like there's a third one I'm not thinking of that those guys wrote together that was also really great. Anyway, like, for instance, one more plug for Jerry Ragavoy is that, you know, he wrote Time Is On My Side. Wow. And he wrote it for Ty Wending, the jazz guy, a Danish jazz guy, I think. Ty Wending, I think it was a Danish guy, jazz guy. Yeah, Danish born. So he commissioned Ragavoy to write Time Is On My Side. Then they did that, comes out. Irma Thomas is going to, they have her do it as a B-side, but there aren't the rest of the lyrics. So they call in this guy, Jimmy Norman. I'm sorry I'm going into all this, but I'm just thinking, it's just all kind of flashing back to me here. But anyway, my point is, it's the Jerry Ragavoy stuff. It's all, oh, that's it. This is what I was thinking. Jerry Ragavoy wrote Stay With Me that Lorraine Ellison did. And that's got that same intensity that Piece of My Heart has, similar intensity and Cry to Me. So anyway, so Jerry Ragavoy, 100% the Bert Burns stuff. And and the Jerry Ragavoy, Stay With Me, Lorraine Ellison does the original version of that. And that's really builds and it's real intense. It's got that same intenseness that Peace in My Heart and Pride in Me has. Okay.
Oh, so what's the name of the Danish jazz dude you were talking about?
Kai Winding. And that's like K-A-I Winding, W-I-N-D-I-N-G. So okay. I think for that original version, and this I think the original version, I mean, the time is on my side. That's repeated as the chorus throughout. But the rest of the lyrics, I think this R&B guy, Jimmy Norman, came up with on the spot when Irma was coming in. They're like, hey, we got to have more lyrics to the song. She doesn't have anything to sing. And so he just sort of whipped them out,
wow.
You know. Amazing. Anyway, and enough of that nonsense. So what I was going to ask. One more tune I wanted to talk about on the album, You Woo Me. And I think it's really, really cool. And I wondered, you know, if that had, if that was related to y'all's relationship, You Woo Me, or not.
Yeah, it's absolutely a love story, of course. So, yeah.
And how did that one come together?
Well, I really liked this expression, to woo. I think it's amazing. So I just started writing the lyrics, and then I did a riff, and then I thought, well, the riff and the lyrics, maybe they can, you know, you know, maybe it could be a nice song together. And then the cherry of the pie was Soren's organ. I think it's a great line. So yeah, that's how it came out together. So I just think also it's a little storytelling, you know, like, because all came with this woo verb, which I think is amazing. You know, I speak five languages, and I don't think there's a word in the other languages I speak. Maybe there is. I don't know. I just don't know it.
Last year, so real quick, I must touch on another release that you had, because it's a unique idea. I want to see what your thoughts on it are. You had a record came out on Cleopatra, and it features you guys doing covers, but only two of the songs are just you and Martin, you know, building stuff from scratch, a version of Shake It Off and also Bikini Girls with Machine Guns. But the other eight or so tunes are the, if I'm understanding this correctly, they're the original songs with added instrumentation from yourselves. The album's called Hold On, We're Coming. And on there you're covering the Sam and Dave tune. There's also, you do a Grassroots tune, Flaming Groovies tune. What inspired you to do that?
Actually, it was an invitation by Cleopatra Records. It started with the Grassroots song, actually, and all the songs we only got the vocals. We didn't get any instrumentation, and we didn't add. And we had everything from scratch, just the vocals, the original vocals. And they were doing like a tribute to Grassroots. And I think they saw a feature about us at Vive la Rock, is a British magazine. And they reached out and say, well, we really like this, the wall of sound studio technique you're doing back home. So could you, do you want to do this? You want to be part of this? And then we just found, wow, that's pretty fun. It was like a work, you know, we were hired to do it. And it was in the middle of the pandemic, no shows coming. and it was great. We went to the studio, and it was another freedom, because I particularly, and Martin has this with me, we don't think it's fun, that fun, to, you know, to play covers, because we really put a big importance in the songwriting. This is something we really, I mean, without songs, there's no music. So for us, you know, the songwriting is a biggest, you know, concern while writing an album. So we're very proud of the songs we wrote. And of course, I play a lot of covers at home, you know, sitting at the piano, you know, it's good also for learn with other songwriters. But, you know, to stand in a stage and play covers, it doesn't mean anything to me. It's not artistically challenging. I don't understand. And it's quite sad, because you see a lot of big venues, we're touring in the UK, we're touring everywhere. And sometimes you see, you know, your poster, and then it's like Fleetwood Mac, and it was like the Noasis or whatever they're called, you know, all these cover bands. They're really, I think, taking the space from bands who have their original material, you know. So, well, but that's another thing. But this project was very exciting, because we just were, you know, exploring our studio, and And it gave us a freedom, because when it's our own songs, we're very picky, okay, what we should do. And in this way, we were like, okay, let's just experiment. This, we actually, through this project, we experimented a lot of stuff that we later used to the solo. For example, reverse solo in California. I did a reverse solo, I don't remember, in some of the songs, you know. And so small things like this, it was very good for our growth as studio musicians. And we recorded all the instruments. Soren was with us most of the sessions too. So it started with the grassroots. And I think then suddenly they wrote us again. You know, they were very, very happy with the results with the grassroots. I think Ken, Simon, David, that was amazing. When we heard from the, you know, for studio big, you know, speakers, their voices, wow. I got like chills now. It was something out of this world, you know, to be able to be backing band for Sam and Dave for one day. So I did this riff with the, you know, the horn section riff in the fuzz. I think it was like the perfect garage band, you know, with those great singers. So it was very fun to make. So that was the, and then suddenly we had 10 songs. And then I think, I don't know if it was our idea or Cleopatra's, they just said, well, what about we put out like a record with all the songs? And I think, well, that would be cool. So that came out. Yeah, we never like said, okay, well, that's the time now to make an album with covers, you know, because we're really not interested in playing covers at all. So, but it was a fun project, and we're very happy with the results. You know, we did everything with a lot of respect and love for all the artists we recorded the instrumentals for.
So I see from your schedule posted online, you know, you're coming over here to the U.S. Starting March the 6th in Seattle, and then you go to Portland, San Francisco. Here in Los Angeles on the 10th, you'll be at the Echo. And then after that, you're playing South by Southwest. So you've done South by Southwest a couple of times so far, or is this like the second or the first time even?
It's going to be the third time we're playing South by Southwest. Yeah. And we think it's just very nice to hang out and, you know, I think there's a lot of bands that think, oh, we're going to go to South by Southwest. They have so many expectations, you know. We don't. We just want to go, and we think it's very nice, the possibility of hanging out with people from the business and other bands, you know. So we always have a blast there. It's a very, I think it's a very unique city, Austin. I dig it. So it's just exciting to be there. And then we play some shows. But I think what we got out of South by Southwest is always you know, just hanging out and having ideas. And so we hope to do that again now in March.
You mentioned you and Martin have a son. Is that correct? You have a son. And does he accompany? It seems like sometimes I've seen photos of you guys with him, like when you're on tour. So does he accompany you often on tour?
Yeah, not often, but sometimes, yes. He's 8 now, so he's a big boy, and he loves being on tour with us. So when we think it's, you know, early shows, festivals, short runs, you know, then and if it's okay for school, of course, then he goes with us. He loves it.
You were doing this, I've looked up, you know, other interviews you had done, and can't remember who the guy you were speaking with, but he mentioned the Dolly Rots to you. So the Dolly Rots are on Little Steven's label, Wicked Cool, and the woman that is the bass player and fronts the band, she's the lead singer and bass player, her husband is the guitar player, and they have two children, and you know, the kids, so like just like you're saying, would make sense, the kids would go out with them. But she's also on the air here in the Underground Garage. She's another one of the DJs here.
I would love to meet them, man. It's nice to have other musicians who are also parents. This is also a big challenge. Of course, you have to be, you know, even better to, you know, programming, planning everything. If you notice, we play a lot. We play like 125 shows last year, 142 the year before, but it's not long runs because we have to come back home for him. And actually, California, the song, if you read the lyrics, it's not all, oh, I'm in California, that's great. It actually talks about missing him. And oh, that's so cool, we're in California, but we were missing him so much. So it's after I become a mother, I love being on tour. I have a total like gypsy. So I'm Brazilian living in Denmark with a British label. talking to you in the US, you know, I think, you know, we're one planet, we're all, you know, humans. So, but it really changed a lot, the touring thing after I become a mother. So we don't do long runs. It's 12 shows each time at most. So, and we bring him when we think it's appropriated. And actually last year he likes to sleep in my guitar case that we put on stage, you know, with the kids like this, so the audience cannot see him. He likes to be there, like eating chips and drinking cola, which he normally is not allowed to do. And then when he feels like a little sleepy, then he just, you know, he has his ear protection on, and then he just sleeps like inside the guitar case. So, I mean, in the US, you cannot do that. I don't even know if I can say that, because you have these crazy rules. I mean, not crazy, maybe they're very responsible that, you know, for the all ages stuff, you really have like 21. But in Europe, actually, if you're the parent, you can bring your kid to a show, for example.
Right. Well, I think here it varies from state to state and city to city.
Well, we never done this. He never been to the US. Yeah, he never been to the, I mean, he went to Hawaii with us when we played there, but it was all ages. The four shows we did there. Yeah.
Well, we can go out with another track off the album, and I'd like us to play Shake. Single came out last year. It's also on the album. In fact, I think the single's backed with Yuumi. Dance, really
yes.
Cool dance tune. Got this, you know, cool, slightly fuzzed out riff. Tell me about Shake. How did this one come together? What got y'all shaking?
Yeah, well, I really love this tune, you know, if I can say this about my own songs, but that really turned out great. You know, it's a nice riff that came up, inspired by the Brazilian guitar player. I think he had quite the same tone, not the riff, but the tone, you know. It's called Lenny Gordon. He died a couple of years ago. He was a 60s guitar hero. And so this is a riff that reminds a little bit his guitar tone, I think. And then the lyrics is about amphetamines, is about dancing, you know. It was a little bit about the mod culture, you know, the pills and all that. You know, we just played Spain, and it was so funny. We were just sitting down, seeing all these people going back. Sorry, I don't know if I can say that. But we're just going back to the toilet and just coming back like, yes. So we just thought, well, just people are just crazy dancers, you know, amazing dancers, everybody. Become amazing dancers after their visit there. So, I mean, I just thought, well, this really deserves. When I have the chills, I'm going to write a song about this Spanish gig we did.
Well, playing Spain is pretty great, and the audience is always really amped up. Why is that?
Yeah,
it must great, just right? be the culture.
Yeah, it must be the water there. I don't know, but they're so enthusiastic. Well, you're just sound checking. They're already like stage diving. So, so that's awesome. So I say, well, I have to. So it's a little old to the mod culture, the Spanish culture, and then I say, well, I'm gonna. And actually, Martin's not a dancer. Yeah, I love dancing. Martin really. I mean, we've been together for 12 years now, and I've seen him dancing like twice.
Well, that, you know, it's so funny about that. So I don't know if you know this, but I do have the band, the Woggles, and
Woggles, yeah.
Okay, well, so our drummer, okay. Dan, thank you. So our drummer, I hope we play together sometime. Our drummer, Dan, I mean, he's really a phenomenal drummer, right? And, but he literally, like you've described Martin, I've seen him dancing maybe twice.
Really?
You know, and he's great.
And he's a good dancer.
He does really, really well.
But he's just shouting.
Yeah, I don't know. He just won't. No, man, I won't do that. And then all of a sudden, there's two times like, dude, what's that? You're busting it out of the dance floor. Yeah, yeah, no, man.
James Brown moves and all.
Yeah, it's like, what? Anyway, so yeah, I totally get that.
It's funny, drummers, they have so much rhythm, but they cannot dance. It's like so quite wrong, you know? But then it's like an invitation, you know, come on, don't let me dance alone here. Let's come to the dance floor, you know. So so that's all about this. I was thinking while writing the song. So I think it was quite fun lyric to write, you know. I was using like the, you know, some names of drinks and amphetamines and anything that could make this shy.
Gin fizz. Gin fizz, right? You say yes. Gin fizz. And...
exactly. Bee's knees. And just to make this shy guy, you know, stand up. And so I'm grabbing his tie and saying, now you're going to dance with me. So.
Well, Flavia, before we hear Shake, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversation.
Oh, thank you, Manfred. It's me to do.
Well, right now, here's a Koretz with Shake off their Damaged Goods Records release titled The Soul of the Fabulous Koretz in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Some of their tunes, Shake. That was the Koretz here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, getting us ready to work the dance floor. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Flavia Kuri for joining me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing and editing our podcast. The latest album from Pennsylvania's Jelly Bricks is titled Dreaming in Stereo, out now on Wicked Cool Records. That title song was written by the guitar player Bryce Connor, and he'll be my guest next time around to tell us all about the release. On your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.